Today, we're speaking with Dan Leder from Bread Alone Bakery in Boyceville, New York. He's also an author of Bread Alone and Local Breads, his newest book. Due to some editing difficulties, my first question for Dan was, how did you become a baker? And that was unfortunately cut out and was not be able to replace it. So that is my first question for Dan. Why and how did you become a baker?
I used to spend my summers in France when I was a chef, and my chef friends would introduce me to bakers. And then we would start spending less time visiting restaurants and more time spending visiting bakers. And then I just started thinking about it.
And how was it transitioning from a chef to a baker?
I think it's like a lot of transitions in life. You don't think about it, you just do it. But it's a different type of thinking process. Cooking's very immediate, and cooking is like you do things and you saute onions, they get brown in 2 minutes. With baking, it's a slow, methodical process, and it requires a different. You're always thinking 3 hours ahead, or 5 hours ahead, or 10 hours ahead. Where cooking, it's in your face.
And when you started the bakery, it was right in Boyceville in the Catskills, right away.
An oven and me and a mixer.
And how did you choose that location?
It was near my. I had a weekend house, so it was. I mean, when I think about it now, I bought a piece of property for $20,000.
Wow!
And so it was a cheap way to go in business.
And how hard is it to get skilled bakers to come up to Boyceville, where you're located, to work?
Nearly impossible. I mean, we train people.
Yeah.
We take local people and we train them.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we do have some skilled people, but we're always training people.
And why do you think there are less, like, neighborhood bakeries like in Europe here in the States, and rather they're bigger wholesale kind of bakeries? Why isn't there a small neighborhood bakery in every neighborhood?
That's a great question. One, because it's really hard work. Two, we don't tend to have a culture here of going to a bakery. People don't think about, okay, I'm going to go to the local bakery. And so it's kind of like, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? I mean, if there were more local bakeries, would people go? But there's also the problem of supermarkets selling, supposed artisan-style hard-baked frozen bread. So people think they're getting fresh bread at the supermarket now.
Yeah, I've just seen that in Europe as well, a baker par-baking some of his bread that is really popular bread. So he's got this giant bakery, but he still makes fresh bread daily. Do you think that's a hindrance to bread baking?
I think the power bake phenomena is something that every baker is going to have to deal with, because that means that, for example, there's a bakeries in Germany that ship their power bake frozen bread here and sell it at my supermarket across the street from me. I mean, frozen bread is now an international commodity. And so I think it forces bakers to either get out of business or get better. Because it's like making handmade shoes when you can buy shoes from Reebok next door.
Right. And how do you see the market today in comparison to when you started out baking bread?
Oh, it's a much bigger market. You can't even compare it. I mean, there are many, many good bakeries in New York now. Everyone's growing and selling more bread. And especially now that the Atkins diet is over, every nutritionist who's got good common sense is telling people to eat complex carbs and eat whole grains.
How do you merit the food education, or bread education for that matter? I went to the French Culinary Institute and took the cooking as well as baking course, and I think you get a little smattering here and there of, baker's percent and stuff, and it's not really a full background, I think, as we're in Europe, it's a gilded society.
It's interesting because I started the French baking program. I mean, I wrote that whole curriculum, and we knew that we couldn't do much more than 4 or 6 weeks because people wouldn't go for it. It's interesting because if you look at all the good bakers in New York, Amy, Noel from Tomcat, all these people, we were all food people, and we all got in the baking business, and in a sense, we've created our own education. We didn't have the luxury of 4 years apprenticeship and this and that. But, we find our ways, And I think even in Europe now, there's fewer people going into the baking business. There's people going into the baking industry, you know, doing these kind of more industrial bakeries. But I think that, and it's interesting, this comes back to the new book, like I went all over Europe to find these really good bakers, and the truth of the matter is there were very few of them. But the other side of it was, the ones that were good were very successful. So it's kind of like the baking industry, the craft baking industry is only as good as the baker,
right?
Which is what it was always about anyway.
And do you think there'll ever be a gilded or a apprenticeship program here in the States, or is that a feasible thing, or is that just a pie in the
never,
sky?
Never.
And that's because it's a bottom line issue, or?
No, I just think it's, one is there's very few young people interested in the craft. And I just don't think that, I mean, the only thing I could say is that I'm friends with many of the bakers. And let's say we all agreed that we were going to take somebody in at 6 months, you know, somebody young, spent 6 months in Amy, 6 months in my bakery, 6 months in Tomcat, 6 months in Acme. I mean, I would be open to something like that. And I'm sure many of the bakers would be, but it's a question of who's going to organize it and who's going to take care of it.
Right. Yeah, because the Bread Bakers Guild has boomed over the years. I'm a member of it, but yet there's still like this really flux and not really steady, hardcore thing about it.
You know, many people like this, but I have a real problem with the Bread Bakers Guild from the beginning, because it was all fluff, it was all talk, it was all the right words, the right ideas about bread baking, but it wasn't about what you're talking about. Really, how do we educate young people? How do we get them interested in the craft? How do they build their skills in a sensible way? Instead of, you know, sending people to Paris to compete in the Grand Prix de la Baguette or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, I even forgot what the competition's called.
the boulangerie something.
Yeah. But I mean, they spend, you know, oodles of money sending people to these competitions.
Yeah.
But what does that do for our industry?
Yeah. Well, yeah, a chef of mine actually said, well, you know, you guys may have won it, but it's just an elitist competition. It's not really a standardized bread community here in America, in Europe.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that, you know, I mean, I think it's interesting because the Bread Bakers Guild school completely failed because they weren't addressing the real needs of the baking community.
Yeah. Well, I've even noticed that, you know, they'll put out the newsletter and say, oh, you got to learn your baker's percent. And I'm like, well, that's fundamental. That's the first thing you need to learn, really.
So what?
Yeah.
I've been to many great bakeries in Europe where the baker has no clue what baker's percent is.
It's a hands-on
experience. I mean, and I agree that baker's percent is important. And I agree that understanding flour chemistry is important.
Yeah.
But also, you know, the true craft of making bread
is the practice.
Is the practice.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting. Well, I've been in Europe, and I always ask this question to all the bakers I speak to, because I'm a rye fanatic. I love rye breads. Why isn't rye bread a bigger seller in the States? What's wrong with the flavor? What's wrong with the way we're making rye here in America?
If you go to Europe and you look at rye culture, so rye culture is basically from Munich north.
Yeah.
Okay? And the reason there was such a rye culture in Germany, Czech Republic, Poland, Scandinavia, is because rye was the grain that grew the best, okay? And so they have a long tradition of making whole grain rye breads. So, you know, Vollkornbrot is 100% whole rye berry bread. I mean, compared to say, 10 or 15 years ago, people were eating a lot more rye bread here. But we don't have that cultural tradition. But having said that, I think we will see in the next 10 years more and more people eating more and more whole grain breads, simply because people are very interested in health and nutrition.
Well, I've noticed just going through New York as my neighborhood, seeing all like the Jewish bakeries gone, the Italian bakeries
gone.
Really going fizzling out. Is that because they're all being absorbed, or there's just nobody doing that anymore? And do you think we'll ever be able to make those kind of breads again?
I think we can definitely make those kind of breads. I think that, you know, I think that we're like 10 or 15 years behind Europe. If you look at the baking numbers in Europe, bakeries really started declining in the 70s and 80s. And now you have small specialty bakeries, there's a resurgence of them. And I think that you're going to see these old bakeries dying, but I think you're going to see new bakeries coming in. But again, it's going to be very a devoted individual, a devoted craftsman or woman, recreating a tradition.
Mm-hmm. And you think that it's a lot of people are doing bakeries because it's not the money that's really going to be made unless you're selling tons of bread and having a wholesale place, or can you really realistically have a retail small shop where you're serving your community?
Well, I think it depends where you are, and I think like in a neighborhood like this in Brooklyn, I bet you could open a bakery around here in one of these, you know, kind of gentrifying neighborhoods full of young people. And if you did it right with a limited product line, absolutely you could make it. But you've got to pick the right location.
Right. And what's an ideal location? It's space, right?
Not, you know, bakeries, if you visit bakeries in Paris, you've been there.
Yeah.
These bakeries are tiny. I mean, it's an oven. You don't need a lot of space. You need a lot of people to buy the bread.
Right. I have a question from Dan Lepard in England. And he wrote to me, Bread Alone was the first baking book that I remember other bakers talking about in the early 90s. It inspired so many cutting-edge bakeries around the world. It was a book that started the artisan baking movement. And he says, ask Dan how he feels looking back on that time now. Would he change anything if he could?
When I wrote Bread Alone, I really didn't know anything about writing a baking book. And I think the only thing I would change is the recipes were very, they followed basic baking principles, but I think that I could have fine-tuned them more, you know, and I think that I left a little bit too much room in letting people kind of make their own decisions. And I also made one critical, it was a choice that in the sourdough process, I actually saying that if you have trouble starting your sourdough, use a couple grains of yeast. And it was a compromise that was almost pushed on me by the publisher because they said, well, it's so hard, it's so hard. I said, no, it's not so hard. And they said, well, you have to do something to make it a little bit more user-friendly. I wouldn't do that today.
And how hard is it to explain baking bread? Since it's really a very individual process, I think. Each bread is different, there's a certain amount of, there's a basic scientific way of doing it, but how hard is it to explain bread, or even like breaker's percentage, which is just really math, I guess?
Well, I have a new way of explaining it to people, because people are always afraid of fermentation and yeast and sourdough, no matter who you talk to. Even like skilled chefs will say, well, how does that sourdough process work? Or I'll meet people who are scientists, they'll say, what is that? Okay, so from the beginning of civilized man until 1895, there was no commercial yeast. So for 2,000 years of history, people had to make sourdoughs in order to make good bread. So if they would have been able to do it for 2,000 years, we can certainly do it now with all of our gadgets. So that's the first thing. And secondly, I just think that it's I think it's very much like farming or planting a garden in your backyard. It's like there's certain basic there's common sense principles that you have to follow. Excuse me, let me see what this is.
So you could say then that you don't really need yeast at all.
No.
Yeah.
Because you grow your own.
Yeah, exactly. And that it's funny because I've been in kind of forum challenges where we're trying to make baguettes without yeast, and I asked Jeffrey Himmelman, well, you know, do you really need yeast? He goes, well, basically, it's a yeasted bread. It's not really meant to be sourdough. Do you think that's true? Or can it be, you know, can you just play with it and just say, hey, I'm going to do it my way?
Listen, there are many, many unyeasted baguettes. When I say unyeasted, meaning there's just no commercial yeast added. No, if you go to a lot of bakeries in France, they'll say pain au levain. I mean, bread of sourdough. You know what I mean? It has to do with just it's a style of baking.
Yeah. And what do you think is the quintessential American bread? What's the style that you can say that's real American?
I don't want to say. I mean, people still identify with like Wonder Bread. It's like, you know, this kind of left squishy, you know,
white bread. It's funny because I just passed by a truck coming here with Wonder Bread. I said, I thought they were out of business.
No. Yeah. You go to any supermarket. There's
you can still find
I mean, they're making more whole wheat bread than anything, but it's still you know, squishy soft loaf.
You think the industrial bakers are starting to realize that they have to change what they're doing, or they don't care really, and they're just going to pump out?
No,
the same
I mean,
stuff?
Listen, they're all taking note of La Brea Bakery and their par baked frozen bread. I think it's a $150 million company now. I mean, it's a big business now.
Well, do you think that Nancy Silverton sort of sold out in a way, like a rock star or something?
You know, it's a tough question.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot of respect for Nancy, and I think she's got a spirit in the food business that's very unique and very special. You know, La Brea went a certain direction.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, but you know, she's making craft pizzas now.
Yeah. Okay. What does it take to be a baker today?
I mean, a professional baker. A lot of patience, perseverance, a lot of careful planning. You know, really. You know, like, I mean, it's very different to be a baker in San Francisco. It's very different to be a baker in New York. I mean, it's a much different market in the West Coast and the East Coast. So, you know, that's a hard question to answer.
Uh-huh. And is it hard to transition from, like, a home baker, say, to a professional? Do you think you'd have enough skill to do something like that?
I think it's a hard transition.
Yeah.
And you know, getting back to your comments before about the Bread Bakers Guild, I think the Bread Bakers Guild did a real disservice to a lot of people. It really created this myth that little bakeries were going to pop up all over and people were going to... And there were hundreds of people that went out of business because they really didn't understand the business.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's really quite sad.
And what do you have to look for to learn how to do that business? Is it go to take a business management course? Or
Take any SBA class. You really have to think about it carefully.
Yeah.
You know, I tell people all the time, you don't want to open a business the way I did.
Uh-huh.
You know, I actually teach bakery management classes now. And I really suggest for writing a very careful business plan, really looking at your market very carefully, looking at the competition, you know, really understanding your margins. You know, it's a more complex world now than it was 20 years ago when Bread Alone started.
I tried using flour in Europe, and it's a totally different animal, I think, than American flour, although I could be wrong. You think we're processing the flour correctly here to make the type of breads we want to make, like European style breads?
I think it depends. I think like the commercial industry is very different, but I mean there's a lot of small mills now making very European style flour. So I think that if you're buying flour from those mills, it's not as different as most people think it is.
Right.
You know, someone like Keith Giusto, I buy our mill from our flour from mills outside of Montreal, and this is a French guy using an Italian mill. I mean, so it's very hard to generalize.
Right. Okay. Let's see. All right. Well, what is your next book going to be about, or are you going to write another book?
If I write another book, I've been doing a lot of consulting work in South Africa. And I've actually been building some small community bakeries in some very, you know, poor and rough areas, making whole grain breads for people who are infected with AIDS. And I would write about the experience of baking in Africa.
Uh-huh.
Very different kind of book.
Yeah. And how is it bringing a bread culture to, like, say, a country like South Africa, where I don't think indigenously it's a bread culture?
Well, they sell a lot of bread there. Uh-huh. I mean, there's a lot of commercial bakeries, but you know, they need
sustenance.
They need sustenance.
Right.
So, bread's a good place to do it.
And are you using different sorts of grains?
We're using South African wheat. And it's actually very interesting, European wheat. It's actually very easy for me to go there and bake because I find the wheat very similar to the French flours and Italian flours.
Right. Well, it's funny because when I was in Wales, we met this guy who was a professor at a university in Wales who was growing old grains that used to be grown in the region until wheat became the predominant grain, like naked barley. And I was like, what the hell's naked barley?
Yeah.
And do you think we also could do something like that, find grains that are different or use old ancient grains like emmer or einkorn? Or is that...
You know, I don't know about it. It's not something I know about.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, I think that it's like heirloom tomatoes. I mean, people are going to keep looking for, you know, better tomatoes.
New ingredients or old ingredients.
Well, you know, I have this baker that I write about in the book in Local Breads. His name is Amandio Pimento, and he's a mill over in France, and he lives in Auvergne, in Clermont-Ferrand. And he said, innovation in baking is tradition.
How hard do you think it would be for an American to go work in France? Let's say I found this bakery that was for rent in Switzerland, and I said, that's a place for me. It's beautiful. How hard would it be to bump into their world and say, I'm going to make American bread here? Do you think they think you're nuts?
No, not at all. Uh-huh. I think that, you know, American foods are all the rage, and I think that people would love the gimmick of an American coming over to Europe to bake bread.
All right, well, I'll have to take a couple of your classes and head over there. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Yep.
Cool.